Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the Alliance Blog, a presentation of alliance-wrestling.com, your number one source for news and information for the National Wrestling Alliance. Hey, are you in the Charlotte area? Are you listening to this podcast from North Kakalaki? If you're in the surrounding areas, you might want to check out the gathering, which is taking place actually right now. It kicked off on August the 3rd. It goes through the 6th, but the wrestling happens tonight. It's the Rumble at the Hilton, featuring a battle of two former NWA World Tag Team Champions in the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, and Headbangers, Mosh, and Thrasher. You remember that from the WWE NWA Invasion, right? Headbangers were former NWA Tag Team Champions. They'll be taking on the Rock and Roll Express. Obviously, this is not an NWA-sanctioned event. However, got a lot of NWA stars on the show. I mean, our very own, like, I think she's a fourth-generation superstar. Samantha Starr is wrestling Savannah Evans. Not that Jaron Fulton is a member of the NWA roster, but his papa, Bobby Fulton, has been somewhat of an NWA ambassador over the last few years. They're taking on Brock Anderson with Arn Anderson. I think Brock and Arn are both free agents right now. Wouldn't that be a coup if Billy could come in and pick up both Brock and Arn? I don't know. And then, I don't know if this is actually going to happen or not, right? Because your World Junior Heavyweight Champion, a man who's been on this podcast, Kerry Morton, part of that Southern Six, he is scheduled to be defending against Brian Pillman Jr. But the last I heard, Mr. Brian Pillman is going to be heading to the NXT. So anyways, if you're in Charlotte, make sure you check out the gathering. I believe it is going to be at the Hilton. So make sure if that's something you're interested in, it's at the Hilton University Place in Charlotte, North Carolina. Visit tmartpromotions.com. That's T-M-A-R-T promotions.com for more information. Pretty cool. You guys should check it out if you're nearby. This parcel of the podcast is going to be the continuation of a conversation I had with Terrell Clark from conversation last week, or earlier this week, I should say. I hope you will check it out. Let me know what you think in the comments section. I'd love to hear what you think. But without any further ado, we're going to talk to Mr. 630, Jarrell Clark.
Mi gente, you already know who it is. It's the Radioactive Pop with Danny Limelight, United Wrestling Network World Heavyweight Champion. And make sure you tune into the Alliance Blog every week. You heard it here first. Straight from Poppy.
Tell me about now. You're living this dual lifestyle. You're the champion. You're the World Junior Heavyweight Champion. You're making appearances for TNA on their Explosion. You've had a few matches on the pay-per-view. I mean, you're really starting to get your name out there, and you're starting to build up this reputation, this Mr. 630. Again, I was watching you on Impact and being wowed by your ability to do that 630, but just your wrestling in general, the whole cruiserweight style of high flying wrestling was very entertaining to me. Then you got to wrestle somebody. Well, I know this was before, but you got to wrestle Elix Skipper, and Elix Skipper is also known for his high flying action in the ring. A lot of his, a lot of crazy moves that he did, literally walking the cage. And I'm sure you got to see him with his time in WCW. What was it like wrestling against somebody like Elix Skipper, and was he somebody that you looked up to before you got into the world of pro wrestling?
Okay, so I'm gonna say this part again. I know it sounds like every time you say something, I have a story.
That's how interviews work, man. This is great. This is good stuff.
Well, my very first TNA match was on Explosion against Elix.
Okay,
and you know, I walked in. Bill Barons turns around to me. He says, "Look, go talk to Elix. He'll tell you exactly, you know, how things should go." and do whatever he says, have a good time, but make sure you listen to him.
Okay.
So I walk up to Elix, introduce myself, say, hey, I'm your opponent for tonight. What would you like to do, and how would you like to, you know, what would you like to do? And to this day, these words have stuck with me. He said, look, nice to meet you. We want to go out there. We want to have fun. But look, I already got a job. What do you want to do? I said, what?
Wow.
And those words stuck with me. He let me get in everything I wanted to get in within the time limit. And then we finished the match the way he wanted to.
What a good dude, man. Like, being so selfless like that. That's pretty awesome.
And every time I was in a promotion after that, I told people the same thing. I already got a job.
Yeah. So. Well, that's awesome. You know, I don't know anything about Elix Skipper except for what I saw on TV. So to know that he was so willing to help put you over, I mean, that's awesome. That's really cool.
It's weird. It's not weird. It's weird that you just brought him up because we're actually friends on LinkedIn.
Oh, nice.
And I just hit my 12-year anniversary at my current job. And he actually reached out to me.
See, again, small world, man. That's cool. That's cool. So being World Junior Heavyweight Champion, it, you know, I'm sure you wish it would have lasted longer. Had a good run, about almost 9 months as World Junior Heavyweight Champion. When the title left, it went to the Boston Bad Boy up in the Northeast. Was there any hard feelings when they took the title off of you? Did it sit well with you, or did you feel like you had more time?
No, I had no hard feelings whatsoever. They said I had a rematch. Well, they said I would get a rematch, and Jason actually booked me for a rematch. I went up to Boston. I think I was up there for 4 days. I did multiple shows. I met Kenny Omega before he even got big, and we actually we had a good time that weekend. Then I ended up the weekend wrestling for the title again with Jason. And it was a fun time. No hard feelings whatsoever. Again, I went into wrestling with the mindset of just enjoy myself, and that's exactly what I did.
Was it hard on you? Obviously, let me rephrase that. You had a couple of matches with Jimmy Rave when you were in Wildside. He recently passed away in the last few years. Mm-hmm. Did you have any contact with him, and did you keep up any kind of relationship with Jimmy Rave over the years?
No. One thing people tend to know about me is I'm kind of a solitary person. I keep my friend circle very small.
Got it.
And, you know, yes, I was associates. We were always, you know, very, very well sociable with each other through FIP and Wildside, you know,
right,
and all the other shows that we worked on together. But he did reach out to me 2 years ago when things started to kind of go south, and, you know, we had a discussion, and I wished him well. And then I reached out to him again last year just to check on him before he passed away, you know. And that was it. Maybe like 2 weeks later, I found out he was gone.
It was very unexpected. And just because, you know, in this world that, you know, when you don't know, you kind of put pieces together and like, oh, I figured everyone's buddies, right? Everyone still talks to each other. And you, with the fact that you guys are both former junior heavyweight champions, of course you guys are best friends. Like, obviously that's an imaginary world, but I'm glad you got to reach out to him before he passed away. We had talked for a very long time about him coming onto this podcast, and it never worked out. And then he got sick. And of course I wasn't going to ask him to come on the podcast when he was in the hospital, and then he was gone. So it's Just a sad story, sad to hear about him. But let's move forward. Let's talk about FIP. This was one of those super indies kind of born on the back of Ring of Honor that was based kind of in the Southeast. You had an opportunity to wrestle there and had several matches there. And again, always in with the junior heavyweights, but the level of competition that you got to face off against, again, like Sal Renaro, James Gibson, Scoot Andrews, Wardell Walker, Steve Madison, Cahagas, even MVP was there, Spanky, CM Punk. I mean, there was a lot of great talented wrestlers that were in FIP that a lot of people forget. What was it like stepping into that FIP venue, and did you at any point feel intimidated by some of the indie darlings that were there?
The only time I really felt intimidated when I was wrestling there was when I had a one-on-one with Claudio Castagnoli and Daniel Bryanson. So those two one-on-one matches, because I could not chain wrestle to save my life, and those two are the best.
Right.
And, I'll say this. Wrestling for FIP was like wrestling for TNA for me. It was a lot of star power. These were a lot of guys that I watched on a day-to-day basis. I studied on a day-to-day basis. They stood out to me. And I enjoyed every one of those shows. Thank you to Sal for giving me the opportunity. And then when I left, I left and then came back. He put me on a pre-show and said I have to re-earn my spot.
Awesome.
I ended up, working with him again all the way through until my first official retirement. So, which I did on the FIP Jeff Peterson show.
And those Jeff Peterson Memorial Cups, those were originally from NWA Florida through Joe Price, and they continued to live on with FIP. That's a pretty cool thing. I'm literally looking at some of the names that you're wrestling against in FIP, and you said Brian Danielson, you said, Claudio Castagnoli, but I'm talking Austin Aries. Mm-hmm. Of course, Roderick Strong, you already mentioned him. You had to face some pretty good competition while you're there. Kenny King, Mark Briscoe, I'm sure Jay Briscoe was in there as well. I know a name that I see pop up a lot here is Sal Renaro. Sal Renaro still wrestles for the NWA. I wasn't sure if you were aware of that. Did you have any kind of relationship with Sal Renaro?
Sal was hilarious. Sal was absolutely hilarious. I enjoyed all my interactions with him all the way from, Wildside to FIP to ROH, where he was actually my first ROH opponent. Sal's cool. I was recently going through Twitter, just because you brought him up. I was recently going through Twitter, and somebody posted a video about a Jerome story. And Sal was sitting up and he was telling people about the Jerome story. Long story short, Davey Richards, he didn't know my name to save his life. so he always kept calling me Jerome, and I wouldn't correct him because this is Davey Richards. I wouldn't correct him, but it went on for a long time.
At some point, I would imagine it's kind of funny too, where like, he keeps calling you the wrong name, and you know it's wrong, and everyone else knows it's wrong, but no one says anything. I'm sure, that would have given me the giggles.
Yeah, it was hilarious. I think he didn't get it until, he didn't get it until like maybe 6 or 7 months later. We were doing the Generation Now show in Cleveland, Ohio for ROH, where Generation Next last match.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where he finally got it right.
So let's fast forward a little bit towards the end of the first round of Gerald Clark. It is 2011. It's I Believe in Wrestling. You wrestled against NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion Craig Classic. somebody that's been on this show, someone we know very, very well, having an opportunity to wrestle for that title after such a big gap, did you have any kind of butterflies going into that match, or was it just another day at the office?
I can't say it was another day at the office, because if you don't go into any kind of opportunity with a little bit of butterflies in your stomach, then you're not ready for it. Can't go into anything overconfident ever. So, you know, anything can happen. And, you know, wrestling Craig, you know, he's a talented person. We two different styles, even though he is a junior heavyweight, it's two different styles. And, you know, just have to work with each other and put on the best match possible. And the only butterflies I had is, you know, just make sure we all come out of this healthy and have a good time.
So then I guess the first retirement was in 2011, and you stepped away from the ring. Was there a particular reason why you decided to step away, or was it just you felt like it was the right time, or was this, did you always know it was just going to be a pause?
I felt it was the right time. My original reason was to be healthy. I sustained a back injury my first year in wrestling, and I kind of worked all the way through it for those 10 years. But, you know, at the same time, I was still part-timing at the dinner theater show, which was a consistent gig. I was under contract now, and I was making enough money to keep me happy without having to worry about doing indie shows every now and then. So I decided, well, let me get out of this before I seriously get hurt, and, you know, just enjoy the stunt show where, you know, it's a safer environment, and which it didn't end up being. But I also had a goal in mind that I didn't want to be one of those wrestlers who tried to hang on to the glory days. I wanted to go out with people remembering me how I was and not what I looked like at the time.
Going back in time in 2011, when you did step away, were you still following the wrestling promotions? Were you still, because I know some wrestlers who once they take those shoes off, they leave them in the ring, they retire, they're done. They kind of turn their back on wrestling, not because they hate it, not because they don't enjoy it, but because they know if they continue to watch it, it's going to call them back to the ring. Was that your case, or were you able to still enjoy wrestling, watching wrestling as a fan and no longer an in-ring performer?
I went cold turkey for 6 years. Cold turkey, because I knew the second one little thing got to me, I would be called back. And that one little thing got to me in 2017. So
what was it that got you?
So at the stunt show that I worked at, one of the guys there, he was young, he wanted to be a wrestler. And actually he's a wrestler now. He's doing a pirate gimmick now. But he asked me about a wrestling school. I told him about Jason's I Believe in Wrestling, or Team Vision Dojo. I told him about that, and you know, he asked me to come down and work with him. And I'm like, this is my friend. You know, definitely I'll come down and work with him. And yeah, I ended up doing that, and Chasen was like, oh, you know, we're having a, you know, they pulled the Jeff Peterson Cup show for that time. So, or was it the floor? I think it was the Jeff Peterson. Don't quote me. It was a Cruiserweight tournament. So he kind of got me to step out for that. So I wrestled Chasen in the first round and then Vander Ortugan in the second round. But you know, it was a pretty big thing for me, cause I went out there and I did everything that I still could do, even though I was maybe 20 pounds heavier at the time. It was kind of a proof positive to myself that I could still do it.
For sure. For sure. And so you had several matches with Believe Wrestling in 2017, kind of slowed down to 2018. And of course, by 2019, you were heading towards that second retirement. Is that where we stand now? Is there any kind of lust for the ring, or is it out of your system now?
All gone. Absolutely all gone. Hold on, you're about to hear my wife. She just got home from work, so sorry. She's talking on the phone to her mom.
No worries at all. This is the real world, man. I completely appreciate that. It's funny because over the years, I've had a lot of the junior heavyweight champions come onto this podcast. I don't know if you're familiar with Kevin Douglas, who the modern day hero. He was he won the World Junior Heavyweight Championship after Craig Classic surrendered the title or forfeited the title. Then later we had on Chase Owens, who was a former junior heavyweight champion. We've had Jason Kincaid, another former junior heavyweight champion. Then we had Barrett Brown, who was the last junior heavyweight champion before the NWA sealed its history when Billy Corgan bought the NWA in 2017, right around the time you started back into wrestling. At that time when you came back, did you have any delusions of maybe going after that, going back to the NWA or potentially trying to grow beyond just what you were doing in Florida?
Absolutely not. I wasn't even going to, if I was going to do anything, I wasn't even going to leave the Team Vision Dojo.
Okay.
But Les, back to him, he runs a promotion out here called Local Pro Wrestling.
Okay.
Which is actually kind of growing, and he wanted me on his first show. So we actually tag team again on his first show.
Did you guys go back to the old gimmick?
I had some gear made. He wrestled in t-shirt and shorts. but we did our old gimmick. Obviously he was still Bones Cutthroat. I was Jarrell Clark, but we did our old shtick.
That's awesome. So reflecting back now on this time, now that you're a couple of years removed, obviously you said it, you're not going back into the world of wrestling. What are some of the things that you missed about being a pro wrestler?
The pop. It was recently brought up again last week. last week we want to, last week, we took the family on a cruise, and I entered into, if you've ever been on a cruise, they have a lot going on. So I entered into the belly flop competition. And it's on my Instagram if anybody wants to see it. I did a belly flop and I ended up winning the competition. It was ridiculous. But the pop and the reaction that I was getting from just being in that position or being in front of a crowd before was hilarious to me.
Did you work the crowd? Did you get them going? Did you do the Hulk Hogan with your hand to your ear and all that stuff?
I did my old comedy gimmick from when I was a pirate, when I was the cutthroat.
Nice.
I did that and the crowd ate it up.
Now, by any chance, I haven't seen the dive yet. I'm going to go look for it later. Did you do a 630 belly flop?
No.
Could you do a 630 belly flop?
No, I probably can't.
That's fair.
I could probably a 450 belly flop. I thought about it. Trust me.
The other day, I've never been a pro wrestler. I wrestled in high school. I've always been a fan of pro wrestling. I've always enjoyed the high-flying aspect of pro wrestling. The junior heavyweights, cruiserweights were always my bag. I recently went to Mexico just to see some Lucha Libre live. And one of the things I've always wanted to do was do a moonsault. And so I got my happy ass in front of a pool recently and was doing a moonsault into the pool. And I was quite proud of myself. Very Vader-esque. I felt like I had a very much a Vader style moonsault into the pool, and I'll take that.
Oh, good for you, man. Trust me. My goal is I'm 47 now, so on my 50th birthday, I'm going to do my last backflip ever. So I'm trying to save up for that.
I get it. I get it. Jarrell, looking back on your time in wrestling, looking back in the NWA, is there anything you would have done differently aside from studying those tapes?
Nope. Yeah, nope. Everything I did took me exactly where I needed to be.
That's awesome. I love that mentality. That's a very PMA type mentality, the positive mental attitude. I thrive on that. So I love hearing when other people echo that sentiment. Do you keep up with any wrestling these days? Do you watch any of the NWA, or is that any of that stuff even interest you anymore?
I can scroll through wrestling now and watch it without getting an itch. As far as like specific indie shows and stuff, no, not really. I'll go through and I'll see some YouTube compilation clips.
Yeah.
But that's about it. Unless somebody texts me and say, hey, I'm going to be on WrestleMania, or hey, I'm going to do SummerSlam or something to that extent, I'm really not paying attention.
That's completely understandable. It's you know, your time in that industry is up, and it's, you know, smooth skies from here on out. I want to thank you so much, Jarrell, for coming on. I wish we could have done this, like, I don't know, 15, 17 years ago. But I'm glad we finally got an opportunity to speak. You're somebody who I've admired for a long time. Like I said, watching you in Impact in those early days. You know, I believe even they acknowledged you were the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion. And to me, that was a big deal, because that wasn't one of the titles that they featured on that program. So I remember you being there and like thinking, wow, that's really cool. The junior heavyweight champions now in Impact and TNA. That was always fun to watch you, and especially later getting to see some of your matches outside of Impact and watching some of your matches from Joe Price's NWA Florida. That was a lot of fun. So I want to say thank you for that.
No problem. I do want to say something that might have got me some heat at one point.
Feel free to.
When I was in TNA, I wrestled AJ Styles twice. When he was the X Division champ.
Yeah.
And both times I was the World Junior champ.
Yeah.
And the first time it was on Explosion, I asked them, do I need to bring my belt out? Cause I brought it, cause they were part of TNA. I mean, they were part of NWA.
Right.
The first time they told me no, maybe next time. And sure enough, next time it was, it was on Impact. And I was like, hey, it's next time you told me to ask again. And it's like, no, we're not recognizing that. I was like, okay. But yeah, there was actual couple times when the X Division champ versus the comparable title in the NWA.
It's a shame that they didn't acknowledge that on television. You know, like, we knew that as a fan, I knew it. But that would have been kind of cool, at least for the NWA. But that whole relationship was really kind of one-sided, you know, looking back at it. And I don't blame either party for doing what they did. Of course, the NWA granted Impact immediately legitimacy by having that 10 pounds of gold and those tag titles featured mm-hmm. on their programs, and a lot of good talent, you know, from Impact. I mean, that carried the NWA name in a time when the NWA struggled to be relevant. So there's a lot of benefits to both sides, but at the same time, like, at the end of when they ended that relationship in 2007, I think it was more than appropriate to end that deal. But yeah, man, it would have been cool to see you taking that the World Junior Heavyweight Championship on it. You know, even if it was Explosion, it would have been cool to see that.
Yeah, it was. I really wanted to, but they weren't having it.
Well, again, I want to say thanks for your time, man. You know, it's funny because in preparation for this, I kind of looked back at some of the old interviews that you did, and I remember in 2005, you were welcoming a new baby into the family, and I'm thinking right now, I welcomed a new baby into my family in 2004, and she turned 18 last year, so I think you probably have an 18-year-old now, and you know, props to you.
Have a kind of freshman.
College fresh. See, there it is. Yeah, my daughter too. So yeah. Congratulations on that. You did something right. You got him into college. So congrats to you, sir.
Congrats to you as well.
Thank you, man. And again, thank you so much for your time. And again, this is like an NWA podcast, so a lot of the people who are listening to this might be hearing you for the first time. Is there a place that we could send them to watch some of your older matches? Do you have like a YouTube or something where they can kind of catch up with the old Jarrell Clark matches? Uh-oh. Did I lose you?
Okay, you got me?
Yeah, there you are.
Okay, sorry. I was going to YouTube to see what my handle was. My YouTube handle is Jarrell630.
Of course it is.
So I got a bunch of matches uploaded from there. It's just a bunch of old and IPW stuff, a bunch of TNA stuff, nothing from like pre TNA era. Okay. So, but if you can grab my name and just search it, because hey, I search myself all the time. So,
well, hopefully you'll be searching this video later too. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to do this today. Really appreciate it.
No problem, boss man.
All right, you have a good one.
You too. Thank you very much for having
me. And that was Jarrell Clark, guys. So that's going to do it for us this week on the Alliance Guys podcast. Until next time, we'll see you at the matches.
Thanks for joining the stream. This has been a presentation of alliance-wrestling.com. We genuinely appreciate your support. Would you consider subscribing so you'll never miss a future episode? I'd also like to remind you, we do a live stream every Tuesday at 5 p.m. for NWA Power. You can find us on social media at The Alliance Blog. And until next time, we are The Alliance.
We started podcasting in 2008. And before that, I was writing interviews up on alliance-wrestling.com, your number one source for news and information for the National Wrestling Alliance. And Jarrell Clark was a guy that I always wanted to have come on. He was so explosive and so dynamic, and nobody knew a whole lot about him. He mentioned in the interview, he's very kept to himself over the years, and that's probably for the best. But again, he's somebody that he had a very explosive career while he was wrestling, and again, all those places he worked. So I'm glad we finally got to have him come on. Make sure you tune in tomorrow. We're going to be discussing this whole ESPN top 30 for 30 list that recently came out. And I hope you guys will join us to speak about that. Also, I believe we'll be talking a little bit about the announcement that EC3 made with regards to the world title match taking place at the 75th anniversary show pay-per-view for the NWA. So, hey, until next time, guys, we'll see you at the matches.
Thanks for joining the stream. This has been a presentation of alliance-wrestling.com. We genuinely appreciate your support. Would you consider subscribing so you'll never miss a future episode? I'd also like to remind you, we do a live stream every Tuesday at 5 p.m. for NWA Power. You can find us on social media at The Alliance Blog. And until next time, we are The Alliance.